failure is a step closer to success. You're listening to episode 19 of Learn With Us. I'm Ken.
And I'm Nikos. Learn With Us is a podcast for developers who want to be better programmers.
It's been a while. Today we're going to talk about our evolution in programming languages. Like, where did we start and where are we at now, and why did we choose the path that we are on, right?
Sounds good to me.
So to kick things off, I had a question sent to me on Twitter from Amy Carney, and she asks, as I try to get through the fog of JavaScript, I'm left wondering, how did you decide what was your language? What were or are the best resources that have kept you learning and mastering the foundation and beyond? So it's a great question.
Good question.
And thank you for asking it.
Yeah.
So from my personal experience, I started, well, going back to 1996, I started writing HTML because that's, I guess, what a bunch of nerdy kids did when they had their first computer, is why not write HTML, build out your own website. I didn't actually build out big websites. I just had those animated GIFs and MIDI music players on my GeoCities page. Did you have those, Nikos? GeoCities?
Yeah, I'd use Cities. Yeah, one of my friends at school, I thought it would be a practical joke to go on there and post dodgy messages and freak me out for a while. Nice.
So as I matured and started getting into real programming and development, I reached for PHP, and PHP was kind of like the easiest thing to get into in the early 2000s, mostly because every Linux server had it running out of the box, and you didn't really have to do much other than just upload a PHP script and have it execute by the server and render some HTML to the page. So that was kind of easy and fun for a little while. Mm-hmm. But I didn't quite understand the scope of PHP and how to do a lot of the stuff that was cool. So I moved on to something that I could kind of grok a little bit more. And I kind of jumped into WordPress, and because that kind of had PHP with training wheels. Kind of there was a framework that I could work with, not just writing, you know, PHP block tags all over the place. So, and Nikos, did you start out with anything like PHP, just a simple server-side scripting language, or Perl, or anything like that?
I had about a year in Java. So I had about a year's course in university before Java, and then I did 6 months placement using Java and assembly language, and then went back to university, did another year of physics. Then after that, I went into the Wild West, and I was learning MySQL, Flash, ActionScript, HTML, CSS, PHP, JavaScript. Took me a year before I got a job. Definitely don't recommend that route. Just learn JavaScript.
Yeah.
Believe me.
Yeah, right. JavaScript is probably the number one best decision I've ever made. But anyway, just kind of going on through the evolution of my career. Yeah, so I didn't do the whole learn the whole kitchen sink like you did, but I learned these pieces as I went. Eventually, I just started freelancing, and a lot of the freelance gigs that I got were WordPress-based. And at some point, I landed a full-time job at an advertising agency building WordPress sites. And there were a couple of our clients that had custom PHP-backed sites. And those were interesting, not all that fun to work on, but definitely interesting, and kind of got me inspired to move beyond PHP and WordPress. So yeah, I worked at that job for a few years, and then I decided I wanted to actually build web apps and not just marketing based websites. I wanted to move beyond search engine optimization and putting together, you know, YouTube videos and whatnot for clients. And I wanted to actually build web apps. And I found a lot of the job descriptions at the time were asking for Angular and Ember developers. And this was like 2012 or 2013, I think, at the time. So
I Angular remember those days.
Angular was pretty young. jQuery was still like a popular thing. But there were definitely calls for action to stop using jQuery. But it had its place, and you know, it, without being a jQuery expert, I probably wouldn't have I wouldn't have made my way to JavaScript as like this is the language that I want to stay in. But jQuery is kind of like that gateway drug, got me hooked on what JavaScript was capable of. But yeah, the jobs that I was looking at were like Angular or Ember jobs, or at the time there was Backbone and Marionette and some other, you know, service side or client side frameworks. So that's kind of where I went, and JavaScript has served me well. I think if I wasn't doing JavaScript today, I don't know what I'd be doing. You know, with the advent of like React and Angular 2, now 5, and you know, Ember's continuing to grow. I think you know, these modern frameworks are just going to kind of take hold.
You think if you didn't have the sort of background in JavaScript, it'd be hard to get into these frameworks now, or you think you can still learn it from scratch?
You know, there's some people that just don't want to move into JavaScript because of their experience. So, like, if you are a Java developer or a C Sharp developer, you might not want to move into JavaScript, and I think that's kind of a valid concern for the people that they have a foundation in strongly typed languages. But if you're coming from like Ruby, you might be like, yeah, actually JavaScript's not that too far of a stretch, right? But yeah, back to the, you know, if you had an experienced developer in Java or C Sharp, yeah, JavaScript might be a little bit daunting, and you don't know what to expect. There's no clear line or clear definition as to what JavaScript's going to do at runtime. But you can, and thanks to Microsoft for creating TypeScript, you can add types to your JavaScript. So that's where I'm at today. Is I'm a TypeScript developer with strong knowledge of JavaScript. I would say JavaScript plays about 90% of what I do day to day, and TypeScript is just the other 10%, and that's just like that layer of security on top of JavaScript. So Nikos.
So
do you feel the same?
When people ask me that question, I tell them, for me, the number one factor is ubiquity. The one language that just runs everywhere. I mean, you could always use binary code because that's ubiquitous, but it's going to be kind of hard to code that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Or if even assembly language.
If you knew an assembly language, especially now with the way, you know, the web's moving towards ASM, you could have, you know, server-side code and, you know, what do they call that? Where code runs on both the server and the client.
Yeah,
I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, you could have it running in both places, and you could have shared code between the server and the client, which is great. But JavaScript is that one true language that was built for the client and then retrofitted to work on the server thanks to Node. So the benefits that we have from JavaScript is that it was made for the web, and that I think the web is the future. It's like a free open space for everybody to develop and release apps, whereas we don't have to have a distribution channel. The web is the distribution channel.
Yeah, totally. I mean, a lot of things can compile to the WebAssembly, so C code, C++, and a whole bunch of other stuff. But the thing is, even though these apps can compile fine and run in a browser, if you want to maintain them, you still have to know that language. and that language, either C++ is always going to be, you know, less popular than JavaScript, so you're going to have to find specialized developers for that. If you can do JavaScript, then, you know, you've got actually a larger pool of developers, easier to hire, maybe, perhaps. But you're always going to need a JavaScript person there to get those WebAssembly compilations to tie into existing web application stuff. I think it's just the best job security language right now.
Without a doubt. I think, you know, the front-end web development is booming right now. I mean, I'm not exactly into the back-end Node.js side of it, so I don't know what that job market looks like, but I know from where I'm at, the front-end web development, React-based JavaScript framework type work is going pretty heavy. So there's a lot of work to be done. So if you're looking for a job and are curious about taking up a language, JavaScript will definitely get you there.
Yeah. And get yourself a mentor as well, because a mentor will definitely speed up your process.
Yeah. And one thing that I will say that about working in JavaScript versus other languages is because JavaScript is a really dynamic language, it's a lot more fun to play with. It's like working with Play-Doh, where you can mold it to wherever you want it to be.
Yeah, totally.
And then once you're ready, and once you've like built your masterpiece, and you want to put it in the kiln and fire it, right? So that's like, you know, put some TypeScript on it, and that way it can stay rigid and be, you know, stand the test of time. Whereas just leaving it as JavaScript itself, it kind of just over time will degrade and become hard to maintain. But I think TypeScript adds a lot to it. But yeah, it is fun just getting started into JavaScript, where you can just open up a browser and just start hacking away.
Yeah, TypeScript's really great. I mean, I use TypeScript for basically everything I have on GitHub, because it's easier to maintain things with TypeScript, because, you know, you just can't do silly things and mess up the arguments and send wrong parameters around.
Yeah. One fun thing that I'm doing now, and it's just as an aside, it's not really part of this discussion, but I'm writing some code right now that's pretty fun to write. So we're writing a library that we're kind of trying to mirror somebody else's library and just kind of match the API. But the original API is just a synchronous data flow with a callback, right? So you pass in a callback as the final parameter to the function when you call it, so that your callback would get executed after the synchronous code is done processing. I like that only in applications that are, you know, prevalent with callbacks. But there's also applications today that are prevalent with async await or promises, right?
Yeah.
So I'm actually writing the interface to be the standard callback way, and then I'm also putting checks in place to say if the user or the caller didn't pass in a callback function, then return a promise. So that way the consumer can be implemented in any way, just as if they were writing it in their own code base, so they can use callbacks or promises. And I think that's kind of the way, you know, the fun part of JavaScript is that you can kind of mold it in that way that can work to benefit the developer and make the development easy for future generations.
Okay. So when you have a function that returns a promise, are you saying that you have a function that takes in a promise or a callback?
Yeah. So you had a function, like for instance, this function that we're using is a track function. So it's going to do some data tracking. So you call this track function. First parameter is maybe an object that is like the data that you're trying to track, and the second parameter of that function is a function, so it would take the callback function, right? So say you just passed one parameter, the first parameter, which is the object that you're going to track, but you didn't pass a second parameter.
Yeah.
In that case, we'd identify that you did not pass the second parameter, and instead instead of calling a callback function, we'd return a promise.
Right. Okay.
So that way, when your code is implemented, you would know, okay, this is a promise now, so that I'm going to use the then or the catch to resolve this promise, or to take action after the promise resolves.
Okay, cool.
So that's like asynchronous code. However, if you were to pass in a callback function as a second parameter, instead of returning a promise, we would return void after we called the callback.
Mm-hmm.
So that way the runtime doesn't know up front, this is not a promise, this is a callback. So it would run that code asynchronously.
Okay. So regarding people wanting to learn JavaScript, I would say that it has to be you have to be able to commit to a longish period of time to learn it to a certain degree of efficiency. You know, I'm talking 3 months, 6 months. If you're learning from scratch, you know, realistically, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 3 to 6 months before you get anywhere near to thinking about becoming a junior developer, you know, and that's with steering and guiding as well. You know, if you want to learn it by yourself, then 6 months, 7 months, maybe 8 months. If you just want to watch YouTube videos and stuff like that.
Yeah, but at some point you get to a point where watching YouTube videos and studying out of books, it only gets you so far. The actual piece that's going to teach you something is to write something, to build something, to make something. So if you start with a GitHub, empty GitHub repo, and you do npm init, you get that package JSON, you start building something, whether it's a client-side app or a server-side app, you write some tests, you learn some new features, you learn some new functionality of the code, you get bring in some libraries. That's going to get you to level up faster than actually reading or watching videos.
Yeah. And build one thing that you're interested in and build it well and focus your energy in that repository so you have something to show somebody. You wouldn't believe how many people, even experienced developers, don't have hardly anything to show on GitHub. You know, like people with 2-3 years experience and you're like, okay, I like what your CV says. You know, I could send you code samples and tests, but I can't really bother doing that. So let's just see what you got in GitHub. And a lot of times there's just nothing there.
Yeah. So one of the things of like looking for work is to show what you're capable of. And a lot of times once you submit your resume or you apply for a job, the people looking at that job or that resume application, whatever, they're not really looking that closely at that. They're going to go to your GitHub profile. They're going to go to your LinkedIn, and they're going to see how you present yourself online. And if they see nothing, then they have no desire to move forward, right? So having something is better than nothing. And if you can't provide the GitHub or LinkedIn in that application, you should then offer to send them code samples.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way that they're going to know that you're a good developer, that you pay attention to modern trends. You can write anything you want on paper, but if it doesn't have a code example to go with it, they're just going to glance over it and move on to the next person.
Yeah. So what I'm doing now is I'm writing my own interviews. So what I've done is I've created a GitHub repository called Vanilla JavaScript Candidate Tests, and these are small folders with questions and answers, and it's code stubs, and I ask them to complete the stubs there and then to get it to work. And they're not trick questions, they're just simple things like pass this function here, execute it, resolve this promise, do a bit of DOM manipulation, that kind of stuff. And if they can't do that, then I'm not hiring them.
Right.
I won't tell my clients to hire them, because I do that now for clients. I'm consulting on the hiring process. So you can go into that repository and check those things out, and I'm going to be adding to that as I go along, as I increase these the amount of tests on there.
Cool. So you'd never hire me, because I don't like to write any DOM manipulation code.
Well, of course, I'd love to hire you again. It would just be like, as long as the client's got the extremely high wages that you must command, then that's fine with me.
Right.
Certainly make the podcast easier being on, being here.
That's right. We wouldn't have to worry about time zones.
Yeah.
And 2:30 a.m. versus 2:30 p.m.
Yeah, that's what happens, isn't it? Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like you know, the evolution of the developer and like the language that you choose is really a personal choice. You know, I only stick to JavaScript because it's fun, and if there were another language that came out that was also fun, I, you know, might try it and might get hooked on it. But right now, JavaScript's still been a pretty fun language, so that's kind of why I stick with it. But yeah, I mean, there's things like Rust and Go and you know, other languages that have been coming out. Elm looks promising, but JavaScript is ubiquitous, right? Like you can't go anywhere and have it work everywhere like JavaScript does. So keep coming back to it.
Yeah, just do it. Just do it. You know, like they say at Nike, just do it. Just do JavaScript. End of story.
Just do it.
If a C++ developer comes up to you, comes up to me, or you know, Go or Rust or Flash or Assembly, and says, "Nikos, why should we learn JavaScript?" I will reply, "Because," and that will be enough.
Because internets.
Because that's enough. I mean, I used to get in trouble in school. My the head teacher would, she was called Mrs. Nemo, and she would invite me into the office, and she'd start telling me, "Why did you do this?" I would go, "Because," and then she'd go, "Why did you do this, Nikos? That's not right. Because is not an answer. Why did you do it?" And I'll go, "Because." Can you say that again? I'd say, "Because." Like, I remember one time, I must have been like 12 times. And it wasn't just me, it was me and my friend that were being naughty as well. So he was going, "Because." And she would ask me, me why I did it. And I would say, "Because" as well. Okay.
So you respected authority at a young age?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Great. So what have you been up to outside of podcasting?
Crying because of the Bitcoin, pretty much. Yeah.
Oh, tell me about it, because I have not been paying attention, but I have heard it.
I just want to forget about it almost, and just sell everything and forget about it ever happened. But you know, it's just. It's trouble is, it's mostly just speculation now, and it's not really about technology, so that's what really messes up the market. So I don't know, I mean, there's some cool stuff out there, but like, there's just so much FUD going around, fear, uncertainty, doubt, you know. It's just, it needs to settle down a bit before people take it seriously again, you know. The blockchain's fine, but it's just this crazy speculation, it's ruining things.
I've been recently investing in doing micro investments through an app called Stockpile.
Okay.
And so I've been not trading, but I've been just like buying some stocks, like one or two stocks here and there, you know, mm-hmm. just to see like how the market's doing and watching these things. And the last couple of weeks, it's just kind of been the U.S. stock market has just been dropping. And I'm like,
yeah, it's crazy today, man. It's like a bloodbath out there.
Yeah, so I'm just glad I'm not like heavily invested right now. But man, if I were, I'd be like, oh, I should probably like pull my money out.
Yeah, I don't really enjoy this sort of investing right now. It's just I think I'm just going to just try and move away from it and focus on business. You know, it's reliable JavaScript. You know, building my brand as a JavaScript mentor. That's the way I'm going, man. I'm pulling back from all this crypto stuff. I mean, it's just. It's horrible. You look at these charts and you just feel your IQ dropping, you know?
Yeah. I don't want anything that makes me seem dumber than I already am.
Yeah. It's just so unproductive. It's so unproductive looking at those charts. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm also been doing some acting, lessons. I want to try and get maybe into some screen acting. So it's a bit different from programming, I tell you what. But it's the variety that's interesting. You know, it's like instead of me sitting programming, I'm learning lines and then acting in front of these people and a camera and watching replays and me talk to people and going, man, I need to spend less time programming. My eyes look so so bags under my eyes, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if I could do acting. I've been trying to. So I have a my daughter is in a drama class at her school.
Uh-huh.
So she has one class each day for drama.
Uh-huh.
And I try to get her to like, okay, tell me what the story is. You know, what character are you playing? And she's like, oh, I'm a dragon. I'm like, okay, you're a dragon. Are you a nice dragon? And she's like, no, I'm a mean dragon, and I make fun of the villagers. I'm like, okay, well, like show me some of your, or read me some of your lines. And so she does, and she gets like a little, just with me, a little nervous and like reluctant to do it. But I have no idea what it would be like if I were to get on stage and try to act in front of somebody like that. I mean, knowing your lines is one thing, but actually acting out the piece, that's really challenging. So I commend you for putting yourself out there like that.
Yeah, I mean, diversity. I just like diversity of activities, you know.
Yeah.
I couldn't be a software tester. I wrote a chapter for my book today on hiring testers, and I posted it on LinkedIn. Basically, you have such a repetitive job, but I mean, I'm saying in the article you have to respect them and pay them well because it's hard work testing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I could do it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think we're at the end of our show.
Yeah, that was good. Good, enjoyed it. Good to talk again and.
Yeah,
it was good talk,
and thank you, Amy, for sending in your question. I hope we answered it. I feel like more questions like this would be appreciated. This is something to talk about rather than just talk about our acting skills or lack thereof.
Yeah,
in my case. So if you want to get a hold of us, you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Learn With Us Pod. We don't have a Patreon page yet, but if you want to send us money, we'll take it in Bitcoin.
Oh, absolutely! not Bitcoin now. Just dollars in the mail. We don't want any Bitcoin.
Yeah,
it'll be worth anything next week.
You can find us on what is it? iTunes? iTunes.
Yeah.
But if you find us there, leave us a 5-star review.
Yes,
and
please.
If you leave us a 5-star review.
We beg you for 5-10. Please, we beg you for a 5-star review. We beg you.
Yeah. We'll read your name aloud on our show.
Yes.
So.
Ken will read your name and I will sing your name.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. So, until next time, thanks for listening.
See y'all.